What's up, Hypebeast? This is Hypebeast Radio, reporting live.
We taking over.
Yes, sir. This is your host.
No more.
Bob.
A stretch. Nah. It's a stretch and Bobito take over. No, I'm sorry.
There you have it.
Let me stop.
My co-host here today is Manny, who's also our host of Soundcheck. What's up, Manny?
Hey.
And if you guys are already here, we have Bobito and Stretch in the building.
Yo.
What's going on?
What's up? What's good?
Yes, sir. Nice. Big legends behind the mic, so you guys are totally used to this. I don't know if this is worse or better than your college days, like the college days in Columbia.
This?
Yeah.
This can't even compare. This is the penthouse.
This microphone alone is probably exceeds the entire budget of our 8-year radio history together radio.
These mics don't have bacteria.
Yeah.
That is actually visible to the human to the
up,
naked eye.
Yeah, caked up in
the mic grill
from the 1940s.
Yeah, like
there's 1940 bacteria.
Yeah, we're not WKCR like preventing mics. People from doing graffiti on the bathroom mirrors or anything like that either.
No.
Thank you guys for coming through. Before we jump into why you guys are here, what you guys want to promote. For our readers that don't know, I mean they should, right? You guys made a huge splash, right, in the 90s with your radio show on Columbia
Classics.
University.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Tell us. I mean, I think you guys. That should already be known. You guys have a documentary. It's on Netflix now. Please go watch it. So if you guys don't know who they are, please watch that.
The film title is Stretch and Bobito Radio That Changed Lives.
Right.
It's on Netflix and Showtime.
Yep.
Okay.
Currently, yeah.
But what I want to know is, what were you guys doing just before that? What were you guys pursuing that, let's say if you guys didn't link up and you guys didn't meet each other or even do the radio show, what would you guys be pursuing then? Where would you guys have been going? Where do you think your career would have been?
Oh, if it had not been for...
Correct,
oh,
yes.
Okay, right.
That's a good question. Well, I actually have a new film out.
Okay.
It's titled Rock Rubber 45s.
All right.
It's available on Vimeo starting August 15th. It'll be available on iTunes.
Okay.
I've been touring the world doing screenings. Stretch and I have DJed together for a couple of the after parties at the Kennedy Center in D.C. for the U.S. premiere. We did Rich Medina as well. We did Central Park Summer Stage for the New York premiere.
Right.
And in the narrative, I kind of detail if Star Wars starts at Episode 7, so it's like Stretch and Bobito starts at 1990. But
right.
So I detail the 24 years prior to that in the film, and then Rock stands for basketball, rubbers for sneakers, and 45s is for the music and hip hop.
Right.
And had it not been for meeting this brother right here and having an opportunity to be on the radio, I had my hand deep in multiple movements, and I kept my hand deep in them all throughout our radio career.
Right.
So I still would have wound up doing the things that I did in sneakers and basketball had I not jumped on a show. But clearly being on the radio helped out immensely in terms of people knowing who I was, and it created a credibility for me in some spaces that I didn't have to show a resume. It's like, oh, I used to listen to you on a stretch on the radio, first time I ever heard Nas and Biggie was on your show, like, yo, here, sign a contract.
You know what you're talking about was basically like, oh, we've heard you. You know what you're talking about. Let's continue on, right? Yeah.
So I'm thankful for opportunity of this Adrian Bartos guy over here putting me on Columbia Radio.
Full on government.
the radio is just an amplifier of whatever, however you choose to use it. So for me, I was DJing in clubs, and that was at the time that was my goal,
right,
to become a professional club DJ.
Right, right.
And a lot of my aspirations all kind of fell into place within 1 year in a way that was just kind of surreal.
Right.
Because back then getting a job at a club playing, getting paid money to play records was not easy.
I mean,
it was the way that clubs and festivals and all that are get curated these days is a completely different game than it was back then. Back then, it was we didn't have this network of interaction that the internet provides right now. So it was really all based on who you know and like who was in your handwritten phone book.
Right, right.
The idea of bringing a tape to a manager of a club, which is something that I did, in hindsight, is probably one of the biggest wastes of time and waste of a $8.99 metal cassette I could have done. Back then, from like as soon as I really learned what it took and what was going on in like the indie hip hop music scene, and when I say indie, I really mean all of it, because until Tough City inked a deal with I think it was CBS at the time, and then Def Jam with Columbia,
right.
Hip hop was a completely independent industry, and when I became
Curtis Blow signed the first deal, I believe, right? Well,
Mercury, right?
Yeah,
but Mercury, you wouldn't call a part of the hip hop industry. I mean, they were a major label that took a chance on a hip hop artist. Yep. But I think I aspired to have a label.
Okay.
I mean, like when I saw what Rick and Russell were doing at Def Jam, I was like, oh, I envisioned that would be a really amazing thing to do. And I think in some ways, being on the radio amplified what I was doing as a DJ and kind of as a tastemaker. But I found that wearing that label hat and wearing the radio DJ hat can actually be a conflict,
right?
And was maybe more complicated than I had envisioned it. So who knows? Maybe I would have focused more on the label side if I hadn't become a radio DJ.
Right, right.
I also know that, and Bob could probably identify with this as well. But smashing the '90s so hard doing a hip hop show has been a gift and a curse. And the gift is everything you know about. The curse is that at times I feel like we are too associated with '90s hip hop.
Right.
Because our tastes even back then. Certainly they were eclipsed by hip hop, but that was not the sum total of what we were into.
Mm-hmm.
Bob did an incredible job of using the radio to amplify his other interests. I mean, I think maybe my frustration with being so pigeonholed with hip hop has maybe been more of a reality for me than it has for you. I also know, something that we've been speaking about recently is how Bob and I have both committed career suicide at various times in our lives when what we were doing just didn't feel like it wasn't what we wanted to get up in the morning and do.
Right.
So we just, deaded it. For me, after shortly after the 90s and the early 2000s, I decided like I was just not into hip hop at all.
Right.
And that's fine because things come back around, right? I mean, I know, there are people like A-Track who we were on Shady 45 with Sway the other day, just sort of having a reminisce festival, but he was also up there talking about what he's achieved with Fool's Gold, which I think is tremendous. He's really been able to fuse those loves of electronic music and hip hop,
right,
in a way that, like, in the early 2000s, I was like, I can't do this hip hop thing. I'm playing dance music, and people thought I was crazy. And I think I shot myself in the foot a little bit. Now, of course, 2018, it's acceptable to have a wide variety of tastes and be into a bunch of different things.
Right.
That was, like, maybe at the time I felt like you had to do one or the other.
Right.
Anyway,
I mean,
I'm
you guys
blabbing.
No.
Blabbing's good.
I'm just trying to encourage the kids out there.
I was about to kick you underneath
you
the table.
You can do it all.
Stretch and I have this routine. Yeah, like I go and I get blabbermouthed sometimes too.
We're both guilty of it at times. You're so far away, Manny.
Oh, let me slide up there.
Join the party.
Watch
out for the invisible chair in front of you. That's from the Wonder Woman collection of furniture?
Funny enough, when I was in college, I was in this course for hip-hop. It was like an experimental course. And it's he's a Cobb. Professor Cobb was the guy. He's now at Columbia. And we studied your show, and then it was so amazing how like y'all had like everybody before they were somebody. Can you just share those memories? It's like Nas coming in, Biggie coming in.
So wait, this professor, where were you at school?
At Rutgers University.
At Rutgers. He was teaching a class and he was using our show as a
It was like one of those, it was like as you go through, it was a history of hip hop. And so we went through all the way back to like Curtis Blow, and then it was one period. It was very much so like Stretch and Bobbito show was the hip hop. Station.
The Rutgers. Only professors, yeah. You guys were the professors of
Professor
the
90s. Cobb. He's at Columbia now?
He's at Columbia, yeah.
See?
He's at Columbia.
He was bigging up Columbia's radio station, and he got the call. Yeah, I mean, over 300 unsigned artists came through our doors, and many of them ended up becoming household names who have had, you know, stellar careers that you know, continue robustly into the present, like Jay-Z, Nas, Eminem, LP from Company Flow, who's in Run the Jewels, Mobb Deep, Busta Rhymes, I know I'm forgetting people, Pharoah Monch, who else? Did I say Fat Joe?
No.
Wu-Tang,
yeah.
The Fugees,
Big L,
DMX, Big L. Yeah, it's... you know.
What was the discovery like? Like, how do you decide, like, oh... How did you find the artists? How did you get them? What makes them want you to bring them in? And did you ever like know when they left, like, oh, this guy is.
Was this when you were wearing like your like executive hat? Like you switched from the DJ to like, okay, this is a record label.
No. Cause I guess it's similar. I mean, right. you have to be able to recognize something that has value, whether it's a demo, a record, 12 inch or an artist that you're seeing perform in person. But there was like this whole kind of ecosystem that existed largely in downtown Manhattan that we were a part of. So the clubs were downtown, the labels were downtown, the Source magazine was downtown. And you know, like-minded people at all these companies kind of knew each other, and record stores were downtown as well. I mean, of course there were record stores elsewhere, but a lot of the ones that I frequented on a daily basis were downtown. I was DJing in clubs. Bob was hosting open mics, and that was one way that we would meet artists that, you know, maybe they were on a mom and pop label, or maybe they had just gotten signed, or maybe they just had a demo and they handed it to us, or maybe they just would spit for us on the corner and they were nice, so we invited them up to the show.
Word up.
But you know, the show was essentially a meritocracy. If you were nice, didn't matter if you were a male, female, if you were white, black, Latino, Asian, didn't matter if you were from Secaucus or Schenectady or can we have one more S? Seattle. it was as much of a meritocracy as we could make it. And sure, you know, you always get influenced by the relationships you have with people. I mean, the first time Fat Joe came up, he came up because we had a really good relationship with the A&R guy at Relativity. What was his name? Peter.
Peter Kang.
Peter Kang. Yeah. So, you know, Beat Nuts were on the label, you know, making incredible records. Fat Joe was a new artist. And we knew who Fat Joe was because he was doing promos for Red Alert in like 89, 90. But, you know, honestly, I was not really a huge fan of his first single. I thought, you know, the beat was dope. It was, you know, Beat Nuts production. But he was, you know, how should I say this politely? He wasn't that nice when he first came out. But he came up to the show and like we just fell in love with Joe immediately. And like from that day on, Joe had like carte blanche. Anything you wanted to do on the station, you wanted to come by, just clown around. You wanted to come by, bring Terror Squad as a sort of unknown group of aspiring artists, whatever, come through. And that was sort of the effect that having good relationships can have for all of you young aspiring artists and label heads. Be cool.
What I found like super interesting, among many things,
caffeine, by the way, is really doing it for me.
Yeah,
I'm like kind of speedy today, right?
Yeah,
I was so tired half an hour ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's super rainy right now, so it is one of those days where you have to have like caffeine, otherwise you're not gonna make it through this Monday. I just downed a nice coffee just before you guys came in here, just so you guys know.
I don't condone this behavior, but I will laugh at the jokes.
What I found like super interesting in a documentary that you guys have was Jay-Z like made a point of, you know, when he rec- coming on the show, you know, they had to, you know, kind of be in this mindset where, okay, I really need to prove something, right? I think that's a very different mindset that musicians have when they're getting on the radio now. Like, you know, when you guys had the show, you know, there's a very good chance that they might have had to battle somebody or that they were going to, you know, kind of trade freestyles, right? You know, where do you see like the mindsets now are different, you know, when people are going on, you know, just the mainstream radio shows? Like, what are their goals in mind when they're getting on those shows rather?
Well, I think you'd have to ask the artist and the radio show DJs that are doing that. We're out of that space. We've been out of that space for a long time.
Yeah.
One of the peculiar things about our current show, which is not a mix show, it's not a hip hop show. I mean, of course, we bring elements of that because that's naturally who we are. It's in our DNA. But with NPR, National Public Radio, we have a podcast, which is available only online. People don't have to stay up until 1 a.m. to listen to it. You can download it. You know, you could subscribe to it. And essentially, the artists that are coming to our show, this is our second season. It's launching August 15th. And, you know, our approach is to in the same way that we extracted the best rhymes that artists potentially had, now we're trying to extract the best narratives from these same artists. And you know, case in point, Black Thought came up to be interviewed on our What's Good with Stretch and Bobbito podcast and did not rhyme.
Right. I mean, he wanted, he did.
He did rhyme. He did rhyme. He didn't kick a new verse though.
But
I think most people's expectation or in Black Thought's history with us, it was always like coming to the studio, I'm on the most major platform for freestyling. The most diehard, authentic, intelligent list audience is out there. Like Black Thought is gonna black out, and that was his history with us. So to have him come up to the show and not freestyle off the top of his head, and just, you know, us talking to him about his kids and talking about, you know, his parents and talking about his goals and his visions outside of hip hop, like, you know, that's naturally a great space for us because it has continuity with the 90s and that we're still giving people exposure in unexposed areas of their life.
Right.
You know, and you know, with our first season, we had Linda Sarsour, who, you know, our 90s audience may not know who she is, but, you know, all the civil rights and human rights activists, you know, she's like their leader at this point. You know, with this season, we have some big names, Erykah Badu, we got Lenny Kravitz, but we got Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez, who's a Boricua, you know, rocking hard, making comic books for DMC, Creative La Borinqueña. And so, you know, we're going to try to give you the artists that bring you in, but we also going to try to, you know, share like the it's hard to say Edgardo is an unknown because in the comic book world, he's killing it. But outside, if you're not in that space, you may not know. So and that's said without caffeine.
The only one here. So what is the goal of your current show then?
You know, I think we just said it.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on, get with it, Bobby.
More just Bobby. So it's more of just looking at the human aspect of like the people you bring in rather than just a specific side of them, i.e. an artist, you come in, talk about music. Artists now, when you bring people in, you talk about how does life in and out of music works for you now as a creative space, which is interesting. When y'all started the show, did y'all have any apprehensions? Like, do you have any like, man, this is a whole different, I guess, it's a whole different space. It's a whole different, we're an NPR now. It's not a radio show, it's a podcast. Was it more just like, let's figure out we're doing this. Let's make sure we do this right before we do this at all.
Well, when we did our show in the 90s, we didn't have a staff. There was no...
Right.
It was just completely... It was
DIY.
You know, it was, sure, it's like our show had 1 foot in hip-hop mix show chamber, but also had 1 foot in the free radio chamber. I mean, it was really... We did whatever we wanted.
Mm.
That it's not happening at NPR.
Very structured.
I mean, we have a staff, and you know, the people that get hired at NPR, you know, they're like the best at what they do, whether they're English majors or journalism majors. I mean, they're really, you know, masters what they do. But I think at this point, I mean, we knew that going in. We both of us knew what NPR is about, and I think that was something that we kind of relished, you know, to grab, you know, all these people that are still following us, or the people that are newly following us because of our film, which has really been a godsend because it's revealed our history and who we are now to, you know, so many people internationally. So if we're able to take all these people with us to NPR and have them sort of rise to the challenge of doing a Stretch and Bob, you know, broadcast, you know, where Bob and I are kind of flexing our 2018 mentalities, but combine that, you know, with the sense, the hip hop sensibility, and kind of that slightly cooler edge, because NPR, let's face it, NPR is not really known for being cool. They're known for being, you know, super objective and analytical and
thought provoking
and dry.
Yeah.
And you know, NPR.
You said and dry.
Yeah, it is. Traditionally NPR is dry, and they've made a concerted effort to appeal to younger people, appeal to people that aren't white.
Yeah.
This has been a whole part of their push, and you know, having us on board is just a part of that larger initiative, and we're really excited about that.
Yeah. Where do you see, like, because I'm interested in where's the next form of media would take us? Like, what's happening now is that podcasts are, like, this is the new consumption of where you can, just because we're in a very on-demand generation now, we're just like, hey, I'm too busy right now to go here, be here from 8 to 9. I'd rather just listen to it from 3 to 4 and get back to it whenever. And so podcast is like the perfect platform for that. But where do you see the next platform to be? I think some people see video as the next platform, but then also what type of video? And then do you think about that? I'm just like, all right, where can we do other things creatively, i.e. the film, and how that's now take things to the next level?
Well, I mean, I certainly have put a lot of thought into projecting. I have to. I've been freelance since 1993. And, you know, I've written books. I've co-founded basketball magazines. I've done 3 films. I did a basketball instructional DVD. I opened up a store in the 90s, sneaker shop / secondhand record shop. Opened up an art gallery in Brooklyn.
Rare Records.
Rare Records. So, you know, I'm constantly trying to figure out, like, I mean, thank God I live in New York, you know, because there's so much current, you know, coming left and right, north, south, constantly. But you know, I've done 3 films. My first was Doing in the Park, Pickup Basketball NYC. My second, Stretching by Bito Radio, That Changed Lives. My third, now, Rock World Before 45.
Doing in the Park is becoming like one syllable.
Yeah, Doing the Park.
Like, no one would have understood what you just said if you really wanted to know what
Doing
that
park.
Film is.
Doing the Park. Doing the Park.
Doing it in
it's
the
like,
park.
It's like, well, you know what I mean is you know what I mean.
Yes, I know.
I also feel like it's a very...
compressed into 2 syllables, I mean.
I also feel like it's a very Northeastern thing, because even sometimes I do that. I just be like, you know what I'm saying? It's like a...
I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
It's N-O-M.
Maybe like, wait, same. What'd you say? I'm like, come on.
But so as far as what the next step is, I'm not really quite sure what it is for Stretch and I, or what it is for myself, but you know, we're constantly challenging ourselves, you know, constantly. Stretch wrote an incredible book last year about NYC Flyers and an era that is forgotten, titled
No Sleep NYC Nightclub. Wow, hold on. No Sleep NYC Nightlife Flyer Artwork 1989 to 1999.
And I think what we're doing now with the podcast is a cultural shift for NPR, a cultural shift for me and Stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we hope that we can ride it as far as it goes, and perhaps it opens up other doors that are unforeseen at this moment. You know, even in the 90s, we had done a TV show, a pilot that never aired.
Wow. Really? We need that story.
Oh, we did two pilots. We did one for New York One. You remember that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what was it called?
It was called Check Out Our Fake Library Backdrop.
We had a name for it. We had a name for it. What, and then we did
on the down lils.
Well, we had another. We did that for New York One, which never aired. And then we did a pilot for Public Access Television. Your boy.
I think that's what I was talking about with the fake library backdrop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's, no, I'm talking about the one we did in your crib on 23rd Street for New York One. That was official. Yeah. Wow. It never aired.
What was what was the show about?
Just about nothing. You know, it was like bringing our radio show to camera. And
no one knew what we looked like except for a few pictures in various hip-hop magazines.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, they had vision. I mean, and thank God the people did that, because that fueled the archives for me and Stretch's film eventually. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who knows what we can do as far as cameras, and we're not the worst looking dudes in the world. So Stretch has upgraded his, you know, his hairstyle, his do, you know, from the 90s. He no longer lets me. I used to boriquify him, you know. I used to give him a Caesars.
You know, you get the Clippers. The Clippers
give him low Caesars with a
like
fade.
1, 2, 3, 4. His would go 1, 2, 3, 4. Boricua 1, Boricua 2.
Oh, you the Caesar. Nice.
So, you know, yeah. We'll see where it goes.
There actually is a video component this season.
That's right. Nice. Yeah, Spotify.
Not for every episode, but I think for six of the episodes, there will be a video component on Spotify.
I need to see the Erykah Badu interview. I feel like that would be interesting. That
Yeah. She was incredible. You know, with the brothers, I say it in Spanish. Jesús. How you say it in English? Jesús y Mero.
Jesús y Mero.
Oh, they were in season two?
Jesus, Bobby.
Not yet, but we got the word that they want to do it, so that's hopefully that'll happen. But that'd be like, you know, that'd be like the meeting of eras.
Yeah,
but sure. I'm saying like what they're doing with their program, like beyond just a podcast, like they get, you know, they're doing like camera work and I see them, their ascension is incredible.
Yeah, they just amazing. Know, they just, they're on Showtime now. I mean, it's they've just smashed in such a short amount of time.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Yeah. So
these guys are hilarious.
So I mean, if that was, you know, if the attention and the spotlight was available like the way it is today, back in the 90s, that would have been me and Stretch. We, you know, we had the hottest 100%. Show in the world, you know, for a good amount of years. So, you know, we're happy for them. And we're hoping that they could be guests on our show. We could be guests on their show. I could pump Rock Rubber 45s, my new film, on their show. The way I'm shamelessly plugging it right here. It's rockrubber45s.com, you know?
What's the, how are you going to pronounce that in 2 years?
It's going to be Rock Rubber 45.
Rock Rubber 45.
Rock Rubber 45.
Rock Rubber 45.
No, that was, I deliberately pronounced that one because people were like, what? Right. What? Yeah, the rock stands for basketball, rubber's for sneakers, 45 is for the music and hip hop.
Yeah,
true.
I think the two of you got that, but for those of y'all out in the hype beast world, how's this podcast doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, what's the future? I like it. What's the future for y'all?
You know, more fun guests.
Okay.
Is that a dodge?
Like this.
What's your favorite ice cream? Red.
I like how we pretty much wanted to people who were like important to the culture, past and present. I think that's the key for the Hypebeast Radio flagship station, just because we want to capture what's happening now. Because personally, when I think of Hypebeast, I think of capturing what's happening now and in the future. And I feel like with the radio,
you're making me nervous.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a bad habit. With the podcast you're doing,
crazy and hands
with y'all, I think y'all are the perfect example of that.
Mic,
because
microphone,
y'all have the history, and y'all doing like some really cool, interesting stuff now. And so, I do want to get into the '90s club scene, because I hear stories of how like that was that era.
Hands it off.
One, it was a hub for like everything music wise, as you was alluding to, of how you find meet artists all the time, and also importance of just like that's where you hear the records, that's where you see the new artists coming in, and that's just where the culture was happening. And I feel like that's not happening now, especially in New York City. It's just not a, it's not a scene no more. And so I just want to just hear your stories about being DJing in clubs and also hosting in the New York City clubs during that time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the 90s, New York was the center of the world, but it was also very local, right? So you had a handful of DJs that really held down the clubs. Now you have, you know, you look at the marquee on a big club, and it's like nobody's from New York. I mean, it's just whoever's got hot records, whoever's, you know, charting on Beatport, and, you know, depending on what genre you're in. Sometimes, you know, you'll even see a name that you don't even know that person to be a DJ, but here they are headlining a club as a DJ. I feel like New York is just another stop on like the itinerary of DJs that are just getting booked at, you know, whether it's New York, Los Angeles, Miami, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just a part of the sort of de-New Yorkification of New York, right?
Did you use your Asian word?
I just made that up, yeah.
The New Yorkification.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's true.
It makes sense. Very much.
Yeah, I mean, you go to New York, a New York club, and you're going to hear a lot of New York radio. It's going to sound like radio in Atlanta. It's going to sound like radio in Los Angeles. You know, a guy in Atlanta will have a Southern accent, and he'll be talking about stuff that's going on in Atlanta, but the playlists are largely the same. So in the 90s, you know, you had the clubs, you had the mix shows, and they kind of, there was a synergy between the two of them. A lot of the best music was being made in New York by New York artists, who's getting played on the radio by New York DJs, and then in turn was getting played in clubs by New York club DJs. And that was just a really rich and vital scene, I would say, you know, up to probably the mid to late 90s when like Hot 97, for example, started programming their playlist got programmed by, you know, like a corporate office that was just basically in cahoots with major labels and trying to shove music down our throats. Yeah. That at first we were like, well, I don't want to hear Master P in New York. And then, you know, 5 years later, everyone's like, what's New York?
Yeah.
Sorry, this became a political rant about New York.
No, I like it. I like it.
I'm not saying New York's better than any place. I'm just saying, you know,
this identity that
places should have some uniqueness.
Agreed.
And you know, New York still is New York, and there's an energy in New York that I think is unrivaled anywhere in the world. But in many ways, it's been
Manny, do you want to have kids?
Yes, eventually.
You may want to not put yourself on in your lap like that.
Oh. Yeah. Grab the scene. I have my cell phone in my lap.
On the jewels.
Kind of resting on the family jewels.
On the jewels.
Yeah, it's bad business, you know. That's why you get headphones, so you don't have to put that phone to your, you know, close to your brain. Similar concept.
We've been really knowledge. Monitoring Manny. Inviting him closer to the table. Calling out his mic movements.
We care. That's family. Know. That's what
we are. We're guardians of the galaxy. You know. Yeah.
All right, Bobby. Though, before you guys like hurry out of here, right?
Yeah.
I got to ask you a little bit about footwear. Like, yes. You just had a few just dropped a one of one, like Air Force One for you. A few store?
Oh, in Dusseldorf, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a collaborative effort, but they had an in-house designer. Fantastic shop.
Absolutely.
Let me start by saying, like, those dudes show me so much love. It's called A Few, AFEW, in Dusseldorf, Germany. And they've been sending me their collabs with Saucony and with Diodora and with backpacks for years now.
Oh,
you know?
Saucony. I always wondered how to pronounce that. I've never heard anyone actually utter. I just read it.
Yeah, yeah.
Saucony.
I like Saucony.
Saucy. You got, you know, saucy.
And so, you know, props, because, I mean, the initial relationship started by them just hitting me up, just blind, and being like, hey, like, we're big fans of your book.
Oh, wow.
We love what you've done for the culture. And then, you know, from that, the product placement of their collabs and this film coming out, Rock Rebel 45s, which they were like, without, haven't even seen it yet, but just conceptually the idea of a film that addresses the relationship between basketball, sneakers, and music globally through my lens and what I've empowered each with in my career. You know, they were like, yo, we want to screen the film. It's the Germany premiere this Sunday, August 19th. And as part of that, we're doing a limited edition t-shirt, 25 sold, that's it, and a 2 of 2 sneakers. So they want to keep one for the shop. They want to give me one. And they had their boy do like a custom, and he implemented all the elements of my career. So there's like an icon for my writing. There's an icon for me as a host, icon for basketball. And then he put the Rock Rebel 45's logo on the tongue. And I mean, you know, I helped him along with some guidance and some elements. And the t-shirt is a photo of me from 1987 wearing some Air Force Ones that was featured in my book, Where'd You Get Those? New York City Sneaker Culture.
Wavy hair?
I had a Caesars, the same Caesars that I gave you in 1991.
same bowl?
Yes.
That Rosie Perez talked about?
Exactly. So yeah, I'm going out there. I'll be doing a Q&A after the screening. I'm going to DJ the after party. Psyched to meet them face to face finally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done a lot of collabs with various brands, I did the Puma Suede 50th anniversary in May. I did the Puma Collide in 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the Pro-Ket Royal Flash 30th anniversary 2009. I did the Nike Air Force One 25th anniversary 2007. I did the Adidas Superstar 35th anniversary in 2005. So I've hit multiple brands with like the most iconic silhouettes you could imagine.
Right.
And I feel blessed to have the opportunity. But I've never really done a collab with the shop, you know, outside of my own, because I had a store called Footwork, which you'll learn about in my film Rock Rebel 45s. And I also invented sneaker journalism. So Hypebeast as a platform would not exist.
Cut the check.
Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate whenever Hypebeast has featured any of my projects, which they have over the years. I don't have a direct contact here, but somehow, some way, you know, usually my stuff flows into the Hypebeast ecosystem. And I'm happy to be here with Stretch, talking about our podcast, talking about Rock Rebel 45s and all else, you know. But for those who don't know, I wrote the very first article in media history about sneaker culture back in 1990. It was for The Source. And that narrative is included in my film Rock Rebel 45s as well.
And what do you think about the sneaker industry nowadays, how it's kind of progressed, right?
I get that question all the time.
Yeah.
100%. It's not an imaginative question. It's very expected. So I'm going to give you the same answer that I give everybody. Do you want that? Or do you want to rephrase it and ask me something else?
Why is it so hard to find?
Come on. Yo, Stretch and I, we've been doing this, you know, for 28 years. So,
I mean, I can go in and dive deeper. I wanted to ask really, like, what do you think about Puma basketball and where that's going to go?
There you go. See, now you
rock it. I mean, I'm pressed for time. So
I'm happy. I'm very happy that Puma has stepped back in and actually consulted the agency that was holding their hand with the concept. And this is about a year ago. They asked me, you know, my thoughts. And also, you know, my designs with the Puma Clyde were completely based on, and same thing with the Puma Suede in 2018, were completely based on trying to create the attachment that I have with those two shoes, which is the same I have with Converse Chuck Taylors. When I see those sneakers, I see a basketball shoe.
Right.
Most people see a Puma Suede, they think hip-hop, Rocksteady Crew, Ken Swift. People see a Puma Clyde, they think, you know, the Hard Rock and the Jamel Shabazz back in the day's books. When I see those shoes, I literally see basketball shoes.
Right.
And so with my designs for each of them, you know, I try to infuse that sort of basketball ethos. and be true to my craft and my community and my upbringing with those shoes. And so that said, seeing Puma step back into the performance space, I think is brilliant.
Right.
Because they could lose all the money in the world. But, and I told this recently to Converse too, when Converse stopped making basketball performance shoes, to me it was like, well, you're not trying to speak to my community anymore.
Right.
So I don't know if I want to support you either. And Nike's done a great job with spending a lot of money on New York's particularly to create the attachment of the Trinity. It's like basketball, New York, Nike. You know, you think of those three like all in the same breath.
Right.
And so Puma can't do anything but win by, so even if they break even or take a loss on the research development, the production, the marketing,
yeah,
that long-term branding for them of people being like, yo, Puma's cool. I mean, already people are talking about it, so they already checked off. Like, that's their marketing budget. They could have spent $100,000 on an event to 80 influencers,
yeah,
or they could have spent the $100,000 on a Puma basketball performance shoe, and people are wearing it. People are, you know, talk about it. They might wind up getting some revenue out of it. It's a win-win for them. I think it's brilliant. I completely support it.
Yeah, I think the silhouette makes it that much more likable because it is literally just a modern Clyde.
Yeah, and it looks dope.
Yeah.
I think they need to freak some other colors. I would love for them to do a collab with me, and I could help them out with that. I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I already hit them up. Like, yo, like, what's the deal? Like, you're staring right in the face of someone who is at the crossroads of all this. Let me help you, you know? So so we'll see what happens.
Yo, Jay.
You heard it.
Get on it.
Yeah. You want to hear a crazy story? You want to hear a story I never shared?
Yeah.
When I was the
exclusive.
Yeah, when I was the I was a halftime reporter for the New York Knicks in 2006-2007. I was the first Latino in the 60-year franchise history to break the barrier. Like, they had never had a Latino announcer before. And I was doing halftime reports, and so, you know, I used to be front row, and I would interview like the celebrity row, you know, whoever was there, was Dan Marino, or whether it was Fat Joe or Cameron or whoever. So one day I get in the elevator on the 8th Avenue entrance, and yo, it was Beyonce and Jay, you know. Now, I hadn't seen Jay since 1995.
Wow.
You know, when he came up to our show, and he came to our show like what, four times? So I hadn't seen him in years. Now, I didn't know if he remembered me, I'd hope, but I also knew he was with his woman, so I didn't want to be like, yo, Jay, what's up, you know, whatever. So the whole transaction was like, you know, if you ever been in that elevator, it's like, it's packed. It's like,
yeah,
it fits like 10 people, but there's like 30 people in the elevator. He's in there with Beyonce, and complete unsaid conversation between me and him. He looks down my sneakers. It was 2007. I had the pre-release to my Air Force One Tom's Cool Bob Loves.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the mac and cheese on. And he looked down my joints. And he looked up at me, and he just gave me the sneakerhead nod, like.
Yes, yes, yes. You know? Like, absolutely.
Did you look at Beyonce and then give him the nod?
I just heard on What's Good, on our podcast, we had the horns that come in right on the intro after like the funny moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just heard the horns. Like, this would be a good teaser to promote this podcast.
For sure.
Anyway, so you got an exclusive story. Hypebeast exclusive.
Nice. My guy.
Nice, nice.
Just to close out, do you guys want to offer any bit of advice, whether it be anybody in the music industry?
We already gave it to Manny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't put your old radioactive
electronics on your nuts. Yeah.
Get it off
big
the
advice. Big advice.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. This was Hypebeast Radio. We had Stretch and Bobbito. Please tune in to their podcast. You guys want to shout that out again?
Yeah,
one more time?
What's Good with Stretch and Bobbito on NPR. And you can listen. The easiest way to get there is through npr.org/whatsgood. It's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on
Stitcher.
But yeah, and the entire first season is up.
Okay.
Still, and you know, that has episodes with some of the aforementioned guests we already spoke about, but Dave Chappelle,
yeah,
Rosie Stevie Perez, Wonder. Eric Haze,
Stevie Wonder.
That's actually the longest episode, and it should have been even longer. It should have been like 2 days just hanging out with Stevie.
For sure.
Chance the Rapper.
That's right.
Eddie Wong.
Francesca Ramsey.
Or
Regina King.
Jose Parla.
Run the Jewels.
Hill Harper. Hill Harper. Yeah, we got an incredible first season. Linda Sarsour.
And second season is this Wednesday?
August
15th. When is this airing?
Wednesday.
When's this airing?
This is airing.
Probably in like 2 weeks.
Oh, so it's already up. Season two is already launched August 15th.
New shows every Wednesday all the way through November.
Sweet. There you have it, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you. Peace.